God help me, regular listeners of the podcast will know I love a Shakespearean sequel, prequel, sidequel, adaptation, whatever we call it. And now Joel H. Morris has written all our yesterdays. No, I don't mean the penultimate episode of the original series of Star Trek. That's not the All Our Yesterdays I'm talking about. I'm talking about his new debut novel, All Our Yesterdays, which is a novel of Lady Macbeth. And Mr. Morris, where do you get off helping yourself to Shakespeare?
I thought you were going to say helping myself to Star Trek.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 904, All Our Yesterdays. Joel Morris's debut novel, All Our Yesterdays, was published a few weeks ago, and I had the pleasure of interviewing him in front of a sizable and enthusiastic crowd at The Bookstall in Winnetka, Illinois. All Our Yesterdays tells the fascinating and surprisingly plausible backstory of Shakespeare's Lady Macbeth, her husband, and her child. Because I don't have the equipment to easily set up a live recording, Joel and I talked again last week over Zoom, and I asked him what gave him the courage to sit down and create a compelling backstory for Lady Macbeth.
That's a great question, Austin. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I thought that it was fairly bold, maybe even a little arrogant to try to take this on, but his characters are just so compelling. This was a play I'd read and taught for years, for a decade or more. And it and a couple of his other plays have just stuck with me. And this one more than any others, I think maybe for the way my students relate to it, the great discussions we've had. And I started looking into the history of it and thinking about the actual Macbeth and Lady Macbeth and the things that Shakespeare omitted deliberately, the things that were mythologized perhaps from his sources. And I wanted to try to bring those two together. And it was just a story that was sitting with me and I couldn't let go of. And I think that that was what gave me the courage, if I could say that, to maybe carry through. I just wanted to see where these characters would go. And they didn't let me go. So I needed to work that out.
That's interesting. I mean, when you're writing a prequel, you know where the characters will go. You have to figure out sort of how they got there, which I think you really succeed tremendously in doing. I mean, in the last third of the book, not to give anything too much away, it really barrels along as, if you're familiar with the play, Shakespeare's play Macbeth, it really barrels along as you go, oh gosh, I know where this is going now. And all the reasons you come up with for why Mr. and Mrs. M do what they do later on make a hell of a lot of sense to me. Was that stuff that you knew going in, or did you discover those reasons in the writing?
For me, writing has always been a process of discovery, and I feel fortunate on the days where I sit down and I know where things are going to go, because then you can just let it unfurl. But often it is hitting your head against the wall, trying to think about, okay, well, how do I get from point A to point B? How do I get into this element of the character that's so important? And so I did have an idea of where it was going to end up, but that middle section was really a struggle, because I knew that there was a lot riding on these characters, and it had to feel, at least to me as a writer, authentic and legitimate, because I do care about these characters, and I wanted to see them arrive in the place that made sense, and the reader, if they are familiar with Macbeth, would say, aha, that makes sense. And if they aren't familiar with Macbeth, sorry if I'm cursing any of us now by using the title, but if they aren't familiar with the play, then they could see it as its own unique world, and the characters in their own completed story.
Well, and I love that you say that you went into the research, because I remember reading Jim Shapiro's book, The Year of Lear, which talks about the year in which Shakespeare wrote King Lear, Macbeth, and Antony and Cleopatra, Most of them written in some sort of conversation with the fact that Queen Elizabeth had just died and King James the First had just, the Scottish King James had just assumed the British throne or the English throne. And that book, which explained so well the political context in which those plays were written, made me long for a production of King Lear that was more supernatural than you typically see, and a production of Macbeth that was more political than you typically see. And one of the highlights of your novel for me is a real breakdown of the Scottish political system and thanes and how it's really a story. Scottish political history is a story of interconnected families and intermarried families and those sort of familial tensions and relationships come out in the novel so much more than in Shakespeare's play, but even so much more than you could really get into a production of Shakespeare's play.
And thank you. I think the novel does, the novel format gives you more space to get into psychologies and to some of that plot. But you're right, there is so much there that I could see multiple spinoffs just of the history of this. Yeah. And one of the things that was most intriguing for me was this interconnectedness that you're talking about, the families, of course, and heredity and things like that, but also the bloodlust between families in terms of taking positions away by murdering one's uncle or what. I mean, this was kind of just all over the place. It was not unique to what Shakespeare is doing. Mm. And so one of the things that really drew me into this was the historical fact that the woman we know as Macbeth's lady, Lady Macbeth, was married to his cousin. Originally, her first husband had a child with him, but that cousin came into power because he had murdered Macbeth's father and taken over the title of Mormaer from him. And the historical Macbeth then went in an act of revenge to almost Hamlet-like kill his father's murderer. And then happened to marry his wife. So it was really fascinating in that. And that alone is probably enough of a story. But I really wanted to get into the Shakespearean element of it as well.
Well, and you also do another thing that some productions and films hint at, and the text supports this idea that Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth have a child, but even this other idea that Lady M had a child from her previous marriage, who is as much a character in the book as Lady M is.
Right. That was one of the main starting points, I think. In fact, I think the original idea for my novel began with who was this child and how would he have felt living in this world that we as an audience know is going to lead ultimately to his mother and his stepfather's demise by the end of the play. What would that child look like having been brought into this marriage? And so he was a really necessary factor in my own understanding and fleshing out maybe the Macbeth's relationship as well through a child's eyes and also through Lady Macbeth's eyes. And so I wanted to make him a part of that world because Macbeth would go on to adopt him as his son in historically speaking, right? That's not made up and give him all the rights to Macbeth's possessions. And so there's something there. We could debate the reasons he might do that, but the fact of it remains. And that was really fascinating.
Well, and again, for those of us who know the play, you play fair with Shakespeare. So you don't change your story. So if you know the play Shakespeare, you have a sense of dread about this character of the boy who does not appear in Shakespeare's play.
Right.
For, as they say, reasons. But that was a thing you knew you had to do. You had to figure out why he doesn't appear in the play.
Right. Yeah. And so those were the two, I guess, poles of this coming at it to meet in the middle was I began with just a love of the play, of Shakespeare's characters, of the language, of the themes, the imagery, of course, the witches, the supernatural element that you mentioned, Banquo's ghost appearing, all of that stuff really drew me in. But then I wanted to go at it from the other side, which was the actual history, and somehow weave those together and not make it purely a historical novel that is set purely in ancient Alba, Scotland, but make it a Scotland that would be familiar perhaps to readers of Shakespeare's play, but not make it strictly based on the play either. So that was the fun and the challenge, weaving those two things together.
This is Elizabeth Dennehy, otherwise known as Lieutenant Commander Shelby from Star Trek Next Generation. Welcome to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you RSC? The RSC will be performing the complete history of Comedy Abridged next month at the American Theater in Hampton, Virginia on April 12th and the Hilton Performing Arts Center in Fairfax, Virginia the next night on April 13th, 2024. Check out the touring page at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Joel H. Morris, talking about All Our Yesterdays, his debut prequel novel about Lady Macbeth. I'm glad you mentioned the ghosts, because lest we give listeners the impression that this is a dry historical novel about the medieval Scotland, you know, there's a lot of adventure. The language is very muscular, appropriate to the period, and there are ghosts. How did you find that balance between the natural, the supernatural, the realistic, the fantastic, the political, and the personal?
Again, this is one of the things that drew me to this story, and I love that the play opens up with the three weird sisters, the witches conspiring to meet Macbeth, getting ready to do so after the battle is lost and won, as they say. And so that supernatural element kind of hangs over everything and brings up the thematic elements of fate and ambition and how those are intermingled. But ghosts, as you know, are a fantastic tradition in Shakespeare, in multiple plays. And that's something that as a kid, I guess, reading Shakespeare in high school was something that was probably the most fascinating to me at the time, the most fascinating aspect of that. And I like also what ghosts might represent symbolically. We think of them, of course, as manifestations of things that are departed, people who are gone. They seem to offer some sort of insight maybe into an afterlife or another world after this one. But metaphorically, they represent so much. And we are haunted by things. We use that word to be haunted by the past or haunted by trauma. And so working on both of those levels was something that I think that is happening in this play and in my novel. I thought that was a really important element to include.
And where did you get, as William Shakespeare would say, chutzpah, to write a novel with a female protagonist and writing with a feminine perspective?
This was something that really was daunting, and I didn't know that I was right for the job, I would say. I really like her character, especially as a villain in the play, but I always ask my students too, can we sympathize with her in some ways? Are there moments there? And I think that as Macbeth transitions into cruelty and malice, she again is kind of filled with regret and remorse, despite her conjuring at the beginning of her introduction in the play. And so I just feel she's a very complicated picture. Again, sorry, character, someone I couldn't let go of as well. And so I felt like I also had to do some conjuring, I guess. Lady Macbeth calls on supernatural spirits to unsex her. maybe I'm doing that a little bit too. And so my spiritual, supernatural elements I was drawing in were female women writers that I really admire, and trying to maybe check my own writing against some of theirs to make sure that I could kind of get into that and really, you know, put myself in those shoes. I think that that's the challenge, and it can be the reward of being a writer is the fact that you get to think in other ways, think as other people might think, and then check yourself and wonder if that's actually true or authentic or not. And so, yeah, I hope I do her and, as a woman's voice, I hope I do that justice.
And didn't you, if I'm remembering our conversation from the bookstore, didn't you look to like the Brontes and a more contemporary author and perhaps some women in your life for inspiration?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these were the, as I say, the spirits I was calling on. The Brontes were extremely important. I've always loved them. Jane Eyre has been one of my favorite novels, again, since I first read it in high school. Margaret Atwood was a tremendous voice as well. Also women, thinking about retellings of stories, Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys, as well as a prequel to Jane Eyre was really important. And so, yeah, I tried to immerse myself in that as much as I could. And of course, talk to the women in my life who've been so powerful, probably the closest to me, my mother and my wife. But I was very close to my grandmother as well before she passed away many years ago. And so that's also an element there, I think.
Well, and you and I have both trafficked in writing prequels to immortal, way better than we are works. Mm-hmm. Is that a field in which you want to continue working? You were talking about Lady M in a way that made me think, oh boy, I bet you could write a novel about Queen Margaret, who appears in like four of Shakespeare's plays.
Queen Margaret, I'm so glad you brought her up, because Queen Margaret was somebody I've thought about a lot too. And she's a fascinating character. I do have some other things I've kind of been dabbling in that are historical female characters, maybe who in a similar way are known more for how they are represented, maybe through the arts, through literature, than who they actually were historically. And so without giving too much away, because I again don't want to bring a witch's curse down on my head by, you know, tempting fate here, I really like that avenue, because as someone who's come from an academic background too, I really like the research part of these things, and spinning that historical research into story. So it's kind of a fun way for me to balance both worlds of, wow, I didn't know this about this historical figure. How might that world have looked like to that person? And how can I start to sculpt or paint with that too? And so that it's to keep the art metaphor, it's a nice medium to work with, right? To have that palette there and then see where I can take those colors or textures or whatever.
Okay. So you teach high school, you've taught Macbeth, you teach Hamlet. Can I pay you to buy copies of the comedy of Hamlet, a prequel, to assign to your students? And will you assign your book, your novel, to students as companion pieces in conversation with Shakespeare's plays?
As for my novel, I would love it. One of the inspirations for this was because I was in love with prequels or retellings when I was a student as well. Something I was drawn to were, say, Margaret Atwood's Penelopeiad or John Gardner's Grendel, things like that, that just really inspired me. And I'm so glad my high school teachers turned me on to things like that. And that was in the back of my mind now you know, even years later about this. Could I do this? The question was always that, well, Gardner did it with Grendel, and even if this never gets published, I want to see my characters as the way, or Shakespeare's characters, I guess, is in the way I see them and how they might, you know, turn out. I don't know that I would feel prepared to try to teach my own novel, though. I think that would, there's be something kind of daunting or almost cheating about it in a way. I don't know. It would be awkward. I think I would love for other high school teachers who thought it might be, make a great pairing with Macbeth to maybe read Macbeth and then read my novel and see what that would do to bring those two things together. That would be the highest honor I could ever ask for.
Let's make this happen, people. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Joel H. Morris's debut novel, All Our Yesterdays, is available wherever books are sold. Send us your prequel, sequel, or equal via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. You can follow me on Twitter, which I refuse to call X unless I can pronounce it 10, @AustinTichner, or on Instagram and Threads @the.shakespeareans. You can also follow Joel on Instagram @JoelH.Morris. Thanks, as always, to Thane of Park Ridge, Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Kim Fowler. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Star Trek Shakespeare crossover goddess Elizabeth Dennehy. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 904 2712ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I think it would be great to get your prequel on board, and I would like to do a whole Hamlet. It would take a whole semester probably, but there's also a Shakespeare course in my school, which I don't teach, and I really admire the teacher who does. She's fabulous. I wouldn't want to try to step on her toes, but do something like the prequel, your prequel, the comedy of Hamlet, and then Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Might be a great trilogy there to work with and to think about. So, yeah.
From your mouth to God's tuchus.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.